All right. I'm going to talk about simple Shimura varieties. So first, just as a motivation, so we've talked a lot about GL2 and about, say, if you have S, cusp form over Q. Well, first of all, you can view this as a cuspidal automorphic representation, pi F, of GL2 of the finite Odells, and so you've seen how to associate to it an L-adic Galois representation, OFL, L-adic representation of the absolute Galois group of Q. All right, so we would like to, and this is done by going through the cohomology of modular curves. So we'd like to generalize this picture to other groups, such as, for instance, GLN. As you've seen, GLN is somehow the key example. We'd like to generalize but also maybe symplectic or orthogonal or unitary groups. Okay, so and in addition to wanting to generalize something like this, we'd also like to generalize local Langlands. So which you guys have seen the correspondence defined for GL2 in Herzig's talk. So we'd like to generalize that to maybe GLN. So in order to do this, we're going to need some higher dimensional analogs of modular curves. These are going to be Shimura varieties. So I'm just going to start by maybe recalling the general setup for getting a Shimura variety, just very rough. So on one hand, we need a pair consisting of G and X, where G is a reductive algebraic group over Q, and X is a conjugacy class of a GR conjugacy class of homomorphisms of real algebraic groups H from C cross into G of R, which needs to satisfy, so these need to satisfy certain axioms that I'm not going to mention, but these axioms, for instance, give X the structure of a complex manifold. And once you have such a pair, you can define a canonical model of a Shimura variety, first by taking U, a subgroup of G of the finite Odells, open compact subgroup, which will be the level. So you guys have seen this mostly as congruent subgroups, but I think you've also seen something like this. Then you can define a canonical model of the Shimura variety over C by taking G of A infinity cross X and quotient out by G of Q and by the level U. So So, for example, you have this picture for a modular curve. You take G to be the group GL2, and you can take X to be the union of the upper and the lower half planes. So upper half complex plane and lower half complex plane, which you can identify with C minus R. So if you try to find the canonical model, well, it will be G of A infinity, well, GL2 cross X modulo G of Q. Let's say we take G of Z, GL2 of Z hat to be our level, so trivial level structure. Then by a strong approximation, you can see that this can be identified with the usual upper half plane quotiented out by the action of SL2Z. Okay, and somehow, you know, this is the same thing, but thought of from an adelic point of view. Okay, so we'd want to generalize this picture, and I just want to say a little bit about, I guess, the meaning of G and X. So, if you take V to be a two-dimensional vector space over Q, then you can identify X, which is C minus R, with complex structures. So this parameterizes complex structures on a two-dimensional real vector space on V cross tensored up to R. And on the other hand, GL2, well, GL2 of over Q is the automorphism group of the two-dimensional vector space V. Okay, so this is what we're going to try to generalize to higher dimensional objects. Okay, and here V is meant to model, let's say, the homology of E with coefficients in Q, so where E is some elliptic curve. So this two-dimensional vector space over Q is supposed to model something like this. So there are some nice advantages of the modular curve that we'd like preserved. So for one thing, the modular curve has a model over a number field over Q, and even has integral models over, say, Z localized at some prime. So these are some nice things that we'd like to preserve, and furthermore, both of these have moduli interpretations. Parameterizes elliptic curves with level structure. So we'd like something that also has a nice moduli interpretation. And on the other hand, so these are, I guess, nice things about modular curves. There are some things that aren't as nice, and we wouldn't want our generalization to, or like we wouldn't want to necessarily consider the generalizations that have those properties. So one thing is that the modular curves are not compact. And another thing is that their cohomology, well, you have both cusp forms and Eisenstein series appearing. And so on one hand, the fact that they're not compact, well, if you work with something that's a higher dimensional variety, you know, it may be harder to compactify. So here we just add some points, but it may be harder to compactify in general. So it would be nice to not have to worry about that. And on the other hand, you know, as automorphic representations, these Eisenstein series are induced from representations of GL1 plus GL1. You can see it as a Levy inside a the Borel subgroup of GL2. And we'd like to avoid things like that as well. So we'd like to have something where kind of we only see automorphic forms coming from you know, whatever group G that we're working with. So possible higher dimensional generalizations. Are, for instance, Ziegel modular varieties. Yes. Yes. I guess I'm just talking about kind of, you know, the simplest way in which we can get Galois representations, and especially a way in which we can get local Langlands, because as your group gets bigger, it gets harder and harder to keep track of data coming from other groups. And you guys will maybe hear more about this. So Ziegel modular varieties are a possible generalization, which is not what I'm going to talk about, but just to give you a different example. So the X is going to be HG given by taus in MGC with tau transpose equal to tau and the imaginary part of tau positive definite. And for these, the group is SP2G. So one issue with these is that they are not compact. So on one hand, they do parameterize abelian varieties. That's nice. But they're not compact. And the minimal compactification isn't smooth. So there are some issues there. If you want to look at a smooth compactification, then maybe, I don't know, there's a chance you're going to find more stuff in the cohomology that you have to explain away. So we're not going to talk about these. But instead, we're going to talk about Harris-Taylor type Shimura varieties. Let's see. So, on one hand, they will be associated to a group G, which is a unitary similitude group over Q. I'll define G explicitly. But one thing about them that's nice is that they're simple. Well, so that's in the title. What that means is that you don't have to worry about, say, automorphic representations of other groups showing up. So this is a very kind of rough thing, another potential way to explain kind of what simple means is that, well, eventually you're going to want to understand the cohomology of such a variety the way we did for modular curves. And if you do, maybe you want to understand what the points in the special fiber of this variety look like. So, for instance, you saw this when, I guess on Monday, there was a lecture on constructing Galois representation. And those points, in this case, will be simple abelian varieties, or will correspond to simple abelian varieties. So an abelian variety A is simple if it is not isogenous to a product of abelian varieties. non-trivially. So A1 cross A2. And such things can be described in terms of group theoretic data that just corresponds to the group G rather than, group theoretic data coming from smaller groups. Okay, so that's kind of the explanation for, why they're called simple. Okay, fine. But this is another thing that somehow you want to understand the points, and there's this notion of simple abelian varieties. I wanted to avoid using the word endoscopy, but so the fact that other groups don't contribute, that's a way of saying, you can say there is no endoscopy. Okay, so I should say that despite the fact that they're simple, they're not actually too easy to define, so that might take some trouble. But on the other hand, their cohomology, so once you've defined everything, their cohomology, there are some structures that simplify understanding their cohomology. So, so I'd like to start explaining how to define these simple Shimura varieties. So we're going to work with a CM field. You guys have seen that, I guess the CM field is kind of the case in which we can construct Galois representations. So let's take a special kind, which is obtained by taking E, an imaginary quadratic field, with complex conjugation C, and F plus, a totally real field of degree D over Q. And then F will just be F plus E, so it'll be a CM field. Okay, ultimately what we're interested in are automorphic representations of GLN of the adels of F. Somehow this is what, we'll be interested, or, you restrict this group from F to Q. You're interested in automorphic representations of that group. Okay, so we'll take B over F to be a division algebra of dimension n squared over F. So if n is 2, these are the quaternion algebras that you guys saw in Mock's talk. So we want to make sure that there is at least one place where this is ramified. So it's not just the algebra of n by n matrices. At least, one finite place where that happens. So we want, let's see. So we need a few more technical conditions before we can define the group. So we'll take F. So we want to make sure that F is the center of B, that the opposite algebra of B is isomorphic to B tensor with F. F, but here we kind of apply complex conjugation, so the opposite algebra is just, you change the order of multiplication, and you want, type of condition. I'm not sure. Sorry, I can't think off the top of my head. And we want an involution star from B to B, which extends the complex conjugation on F, and such as the trace of this is positive for any x in B cross. So these are kind of, I guess, our data that we're given, and we're going to take V to be B, thought of as a B cross B op module. So the reason we're doing this is because ultimately we want this, so this is a vector space over Q, and we want this to model the first homology of an abelian variety with coefficients in Q. So, you know, this is all sort of motivated by the theory of abelian varieties over Q, over C, which have certain structures. So we're going to need some extra structures. Sorry? Here? Oh, sorry. B tensor B opposite over Q, I guess. Well, yeah, I think over Q. So basically, we're just, I guess, we have a B action and a B opposite action that we want to keep track of. So we're going to need some extra structures. So for one thing, we can define, so we want to have form on V with coefficients in Q, which is an alternating, so let this be an alternating star Hermitian form on V. So the motivation for that is somehow we're going to want polarized abelian varieties, and polarization will induce a Hermitian form. So we need something like this, and then if we look at C to be the endomorphisms of V as a B module, note that this can be identified with the opposite algebra simply by mapping such an endomorphism to phi of 1. This pairing defines an involution on C. Given by CXY is equal to, so if we set this condition for some G sharp, then G to G sharp is the involution. So somehow what we're looking for is first, you know, GL2 was the automorphisms of V as a Q vector space. Now we're looking at automorphisms of V as a Q vector space, but with a B module structure, and we're also going to try to preserve an alternating star Hermitian form. And so we need all of this, and this allows us to define our algebraic group. So maybe I'll go there. So let's say G is going to be an algebraic group over Q defined by the following. G of R, so let's say R is a Q algebra, then the R points of our group will consist of pairs lambda G in R cross times R tensor over Q with C cross. Oh, yes, sorry. With the algebra C, the algebra of endomorphisms of V which preserve the B structure, such that G G sharp is equal to lambda. so what basically means, what this basically means is we're looking at automorphisms of V, which preserve the B structure and which preserve the Hermitian form up to some scalar multiple. So this is going to be the group of automorphisms of V preserving B module structure and the Hermitian form up to a multiple. So this is why we're saying, we're going to have a unitary similitude group. So we're only looking at similitudes. And one claim I can make is that we can choose our form on V. So we can choose the Hermitian form on V such that the group over R has a particularly nice form. G of R is G U 1 N minus 1 cross 0 N D minus 1. So I'll explain kind of where these come from. So, we're just looking at, what are the R points of this group? Well, the R points of this group are going to kind of be a product. So we're looking at products over certain embeddings of the totally real field into R. So as you saw in Mock's talk, G, so let's say C tensor over Q with R can be identified with a product over embeddings of F plus into R of C tensor F plus with R. Ooh, yes, I forgot a U. Yes, definitely there's a U. So it's a product of unitary groups up to this G in front, which just comes from the similitude factor. And so you want to get U1 N minus 1 for exactly one embedding tau of F plus into R. And you want to get 0 N for all the other embeddings, which are, there are D minus 1 of them. Tau prime of F plus into R. Okay, so we want something like this, and I claim that we can pick our Hermitian form such that you get this signature when you look at the infinite places. So the reason why the claim is true is basically has to do with the Hossett principle. So reason why the claim is true. It's a question of whether, something, say a group with prescribed local conditions can exist as a global object. And that happens if and only if the sum of some local invariants is even. You saw this again in Mock's talk where, the question was, can you define a quaternion algebra, which is, ramified at a number of places? The answer is yes, if the number of places where the ramification happens is equal. Same thing happens here. So you look at a sum of local invariants. So in general, you can't always, if you start with a B, you won't always be able to ensure that you get the signature. However, if you start with a B that has certain ramification conditions at the finite places, say an odd number of ramified places, for instance. Yeah. Or, you know, you can pick either odd or even number of ramified places. So might have to change, or may have to change, ramification conditions for B at finite places. But, you know, somehow that's okay. I guess I'll maybe explain why. You know, for instance, it really doesn't matter if what you're trying to do is, get your hands on local language. Okay, so we have this group, and I just want to say how this group is related to GLN, and how somehow you could try to approach local language using this group. So if R is an E algebra, then this group over R, so an E algebra rather than just a Q algebra, remember E was the imaginary quadratic field, G of R consists of pairs GH in R, so we can identify it with pairs in R cross over E with C cross times R tensor over E, so this time a different embedding into C cross, such that G H upper shriek is in R cross. Okay. So by mapping such a pair GH to GH upper star G, you can identify it with GM. Well, you can identify it with R cross times R tensor over E with C cross. And so over E, this group is simply GM times the group defined by the algebra C, which was D over E. G is just GM cross the group defined by so you can even simplify further. Let's say we're looking at a prime P which splits in the imaginary quadratic field E. So if we have a prime P which splits in E, and if we set our condition on the division algebra for it to be just a matrix algebra at P, for instance, let's say P is a prime of x above the rational prime. Maybe I'll call it w. So w is a prime of x above p. And for instance, we can ask our division algebra at the place w to just be a matrix algebra, MNFW. So if this happens, then the group that you get, G over 2P, is here. It's just isomorphic to GM cross GLN and GLN of, I guess, the restriction from SW. GLN cross some other whatever. So somehow, you know, even though you have a unitary group that you get from a division algebra which is not split, if you're just interested in what happens at a prime P, you can take your division algebra such that, you know, you see GLN there. So this is how you can basically, I guess, connect it to the local angle for GLN. Okay.
So somehow the reason for taking one copy of you and -1 and the rest of the other things, do you, the only sort of notion of your thing that comes up is a single GLN?
Well, not quite. Somehow there's an even stronger reason why you would want to take signature 1 and -1, just one, and then other stuff. But I'll explain that hopefully later. It has to do, so that signature more has to do with the geometry of, although, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, it also helps here, but somehow there's an even better reason why you'd be interested in that. Okay, okay, we've talked a lot about our group. Now let's talk about, I guess, the complex manifold that we want to quotient by congruent subgroups in G. So that will be, let's extend our embedding tau of S plus into R, where we had signature 1 and -1. To an embedding tau of X into C. Let's just make this choice. Then we can define X in terms of tau to be basically parameterizing X tau to be a parameter space, say, for complex structures on our Hermitian module, let's say Hermitian B module, B, except we want to think of B over R. I guess it's a BR module. So somehow, you know, as in the case of GLN, as in the case of GL2, where we were looking at complex structures on this two-dimensional vector space tensored up to R, now we're going to try to parameterize complex structures, you know, which respect the Hermitian BR module structure that we already have on BR. And somehow, this is equivalent to looking for homomorphisms of C into the endomorphism algebra over R, inducing a positive definite symmetric positive definite Hermitian form, Hermitian B R tensor up over R with C module structure on V R. Okay. Specifying such a homomorphism, so these have to be homomorphisms of R groups. So really specifying such a homomorphism amounts to specifying where I goes. So in other words, we're looking for H of I in CR, which satisfies some conditions. Such that H of I squared is equal to -1, H of I sharp is the same as negative H of I. So these are such that it induces that Hermitian structure. The fact that it has to be positive definite is the condition that X, Y, H of I. We already have a form on V, R, using this form. We want this to be a positive definite symmetric Hermitian form. So the reason for that is that you can prove somehow, maybe I'll get back to it after I state the final condition. Before, the final condition looks kind of funny, but it's that the dimension over C of V tensored over F with some embedding into C, where H of I acts as I is for, well, let's say n for tau for our preferred embedding, and 0 for tau prime, not equal to tau, but somehow which is still the same, just when you restrict to the imaginary quadratic field. So, somehow we want to get a conjugacy class. If you want to get a conjugacy class, you want to induce isomorphic, positive definite, Hermitian, B, with B module structures on BR. If you want to get isomorphic structures, well, it turns out to get isomorphic Hermitian structures, as long as you're positive definite, the Hermitian structures have to match up. So as long as I have this and they're isomorphic, then the Hermitian structure also has to match up. So this is why condition 3 is here, and 4 just kind of pins down the structure that we're going to have on this module. Okay, so this is known in some cases as this is known as a Cutlass's determinant condition, kind of rephrasing of that. So you may encounter that maybe at some talk next week. And this condition is somehow going to really affect the geometry of the Shimura bride. Okay, so we're going to get a conjugacy class, and you know, you can restrict the C cross into DR to get, you know, the conjugacy class of the type that we wanted for our Shimura data. Okay. Alright, so now we can, you know, we basically have all the data that we need to define our Shimura variety, at least over C. So, our Shimura variety over C, well, its canonical model is going to be G of A infinity cross X tau mod G of 2 and mod U, so level U. Okay, so we'll have a nice moduli interpretation for this, which before I get to, I just want to briefly talk about the advantages for using something like this. So one thing is, when F plus is not the same as Q, so F plus has degree more than 1, this is going to be, XQ will be compact. As long as you have at least one U0N showing up at the real places, you can prove that the space that you get is compact. So on one hand, we have that. Yes. Oh, okay, fine. Yes, sorry. That's a good point. Okay, so since we have a division algebra, we also have this condition that there's no endoscopy. And you can ensure, I guess, these conditions by taking a division algebra at a place other than P, so it's perfect for applications to local Langland. And one kind of disadvantage is that if you're trying to construct Galois representations for automorphic representation, then the condition that you have a division algebra puts a condition on your automorphic representation, which is pi has to be discrete series at a finite place. I saw earlier that in order for it to be seen in the cohomology of, in order for pi to be obtained by transferring from this group G, you'd want it locally to be in the image of the Jacquier-Langlands map, and that was that condition for it to be discrete series. Okay, so this space is going to be a moduli of the following types of objects. So it actually will have a model over S, not just over C, it'll be a variety, I guess, over F. there will be a moduli space parameterizing the following types of objects. So you'll have a billion varieties equipped with polarizations, some endomorphisms, and level structure. So it's called PDL type. So A is going to be an abelian variety. Let's say we're looking at over S. A is going to be an abelian variety over S of dimension Zn squared. Lambda is going to be a polarization, which is an isogeny between A and dual abelian variety. This is going to induce the Hermitian form. So keep in mind, we're always trying to use B to model H1 of A2. Lambda will induce a Hermitian form on that. And I will be an action of B into endomorphisms of A. So somehow B will act as quasi-isogeny. So we're looking here at isogenies, we tend to run up to Q, such that, for one thing, it has to be compatible with lambda. But more importantly, AI has to be compatible. That is going to be a condition on the Lie algebra of A, which is the analog of condition 4 that we had here. So the Lie algebra will have a complex structure, and the analog of that condition needs to be present here, such that you can really kind of get an isomorphism of B with this, keeping track of all the possible structures. Okay, and finally, the last thing is just a level structure. B tensor over Q with A infinity isomorphic with. You want the Tate module, but I guess for lack of time. So you can look for such isomorphisms, so up to the level that may change them. And this, you know, compatible with the B action, compatible with the Hermitian structure, and so on. And just briefly, I want to motivate why the complex points of, let's say, this moduli space for level U, let's call this XU, the complex points of XU coincide with what we saw before, G A infinity cross X tau mod U mod T of 2. So the reason for that is that somehow you're really setting it up such that this is isomorphic to V over Q, with all their structures over Q. So if G satisfies the Hossian principle, which for our purposes, it just means, say, if you have isomorphism commuting with all the structures over all possible places of Q, so all the primes and as well as infinity, then you have to have an isomorphism defined over Q if you have this. So if you have such a condition, then, well, on one hand, we already have V tensor A infinity isomorphic to H1 A Q tensor A infinity, and you also have VR isomorphic to H1 AR. So kind of you can see that it's isomorphic everywhere except maybe potentially not the complex structure, intrinsic complex structure, and it has to satisfy a condition that is the same as 4, which kind of guarantees that, you know, the complex structures here will also be compatible. So if we have both these things, then we get eta, so then we get eta 0, let's say an isomorphism of V with H1, A2, just over 2. So, okay? Let's say we have all of this. Then this is how you get an element of G of A infinity. Well, you look at V tensor A infinity, you map it by eta 0 tensor A infinity into H1. Then we have our fixed isomorphism coming from the moduli problem, theta back to V tensor the finite adults. So if you have something like this, basically you get an element in H1 of A, get an element in G of A infinity. And by pulling back complex structure that you have here, you get also an element in tau. But all of this really depends on your choice of eta 0. So this is why you have to quotient out by G of 2, because eta 0 is only well defined up to G of 2. Okay, so I guess I hope I've convinced you somewhat that this and this space have something in common. And now I claim that this moduli problem actually can be defined not just over F, but as in the case of modular curves, it can be defined over, say, a ring of integers in a p-adic field. So for that, I'm going to pick the following situation. I'm going to pick P to, again, split in E as U cross U conjugate. And I'm going to pick W, a prime of S above P, above U, let's say above one of them. Let's say W is somehow the prime that you get from the embedding or preferred embedding tau of S into P. Say if we look at the chosen isomorphism with 2P bar. Somehow, you know, over C we have this preferred embedding into infinity over, now we're going to take a preferred prime at P. Okay, so if we have all of this, we'll look at OK inside K, which is the completion of X at W, so ring of integers. So I claim that XU will actually have a model over OK, and it will be a moduli space for things like this, except I'm going to define the level of structure at P and a level structure. So a level structure away from P and a level structure at P. Somehow everything else is the same. Here we're seeing eta P. We look at everything away from P. And I don't want to define this quite yet, but I just want to say that you have to be careful defining. The reason for that is, you know, if you're just, for instance, trying to define like a gamma 0 level structure or a gamma 1, so you want to fix the subgroup of order P the way it was done for modular curves. Even there, you saw that, you know, some elliptic curves don't have enough points in characteristic P in order to, you know, for this to be well defined. You have to be careful here, and you can't actually always do it, but you can do it when the signature is 1n minus 1 at only one place. So I'll try to explain what happens, why you can do that. So which is an abelian variety, and it has an action by, the ring of integers in F. So in order to define, I guess we'd say, here instead of an action of B, it would be an action of an order in B. We're looking at integral models. So, you know, in particular, it will have an action of O. Well, instead of considering this, maybe it's better, so this will be the abelian variety. It has an action by the ring of integers in a global number field. Instead of that, sometimes it's useful to look at, you know, what happens to the kernel of multiplication by P. Or maybe the multiplication by P squared, or so on. So you can look at G be the inductive system of A P to the N, and N goes to infinity. Kind of a kernel of multiplication by higher and higher powers of P. This is called a P-divisible group, and examples of P-divisible groups are, say, P-divisible group of P-power roots of unity. Another example is just the group defined by QP mod P. So here we'll have an action of OK. So we have a global object kind of on this side, and a local object is an action by a ring of integers in a local field on this side. And there's a famous theorem of Sayre and Tate that says deformations of A are equivalent to deformations of its P-divisible group, G. So if we have a moduli in space, yeah.
G
is the prime, the characteristic of W. Somehow I took.
But you have a curly.
I have a curly P. Oh boy, sorry. This
yeah.
Or somewhere else.
Yeah.
This I just mean regular P, like 3 or 7. Okay. So, okay. Where was I? So, you know, you have a moduli space of abelian variety, somehow locally the structure is going to be given by deformations of these abelian varieties. So that tells us that kind of locally the structure of this integral model is given by the deformations just as a P-divisible group. Structure of SQ is given by deformations of G. And kind of the whole point, I guess maybe I'll take just a few more minutes to explain what I said. Somehow the whole point of the signature is that it ensures that you can actually understand something about the deformations of the group. So let's switch, let's just work in characteristics. So let's just work over the residue field, the residue field of OK. Let's say that's some X, or maybe just over FP bar. Something like that. The compatible condition is a condition on the Lie algebra of A, which in this case it means the Lie algebra of A has, well, if you tensor it with DP cross OE, and you tensor it with the completion at U, this has rank N. So this is what compatible translates into. And one extra condition, which is the action of OS. So OS acts on A. It will act on the Lie algebra via this action on A. So the action of OS on A on the Lie algebra via endomorphisms and via the structure map. So this time we're going to look at abelian varieties over OK. OS maps to actual case, and there's an action by the structure map, have to be the same. Okay. So, let me explain what that means in terms of the pre-divisible group. Well, on the one hand, A, I'm just going to write AP infinity, but I guess if you're not too happy with that, I just mean the inductive system. This splits up as A U infinity cross A U C infinity. And these are basically interchanged by the polarization. The polarization lambda. So somehow you only have to worry about deforming this part. And then this part breaks up as a product over all the primes pi above u, wi, let's say, above u as a wi. But the condition on the Lie algebra tells you that somehow the action is always via the structure map that goes through OS to OSW1, say W, which is okay. So that condition tells you that the Lie algebra of the groups AWI infinity for all the WI not equal to our preferred trace is zero dimension. So that is somehow the point is that the signature 0n tells you this is going to be zero dimensional for everything that you get out of all the other places that are not our preferred place. And it tells you it's going to have to be n dimensional at our preferred place. Okay? So zero dimensional. Okay, so Lie algebra is something like this is zero dimensional. Maybe you can imagine it's a group scheme, somehow its tangent space is zero dimensional. That means it's at all. So somehow at every finite level you have at all group. Which is good because somehow the whole definition of the whole point of at all is that deformations are unique. So again, as all the other primes, the deformations are easy to understand. And so the one question that remains is to understand deformations of AW. And I'll just tell you quickly what happens. So AW infinity, we pick W a place above C, let's say that B at W is a matrix algebra. Oh. That means this will have an action by a matrix algebra. And using an idempotent, so for instance, using something that just has 1 in the top corner and 0s everywhere else, you can reduce the study of this to the study of these idempotent times W infinity. And you can write down matrices that kind of would interchange. If you put this 1 maybe here, you can write down matrices that would interchange them. So somehow this is the fundamental thing to understand, and this is a one-dimensional. And now, so somehow the whole point is we've picked out a signature and we worked our way to understanding that deformation, so locally the structure of the Shimura variety for that signature is determined by deformations of one-dimensional p-divisible groups. So somehow those are easy to understand. They were, or well, easier to understand. They were studied by one-dimensional indivisible groups with okay action. These were studied by Grinfeld, who, for instance, computed universal deformation ring. If you have no level structure, then the universal deformation ring is just a power series ring. Okay, adjoins n minus one variables. Somehow, if your P doesn't divide your level, it tells you, you know, your Shimura variety is smooth even in characteristic P. To understand the model with level structure, it's more complicated. I just want to, I'm over time. But I just want to say that for n equals 2, it's very similar locally to the structure of the modular curve that you've already seen. So it's very similar to this picture. You have already seen with supersingular and ordinary.